You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. It's Crossover Thursday. I'll be teaming up with Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings to break down this Sunday's upcoming primetime contest at CenturyLink Field. Looking forward to hearing his insight. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. For a second straight week, the Seahawks will be without one of their best defensive players, but the secondary may have some help returning as they gear up to face the Vikings in Week 5. It is not typical for Pete Carroll to rule a player out on Wednesday, unless he has a pretty significant injury, but Seattle's longtime coach wasted little time declaring Jamal Adams wouldn't play on Sunday night. The veteran safety has been battling a groin strain. He didn't play last weekend in Miami, and it sounds like the team is airing caution here. And honestly, why not? Yes, the Vikings are a talented, formidable foe. They are a better football team than their 1-3 record shows. But it's not a divisional game, and like Bill Parcells, famous for saying, you are what your record says you are, they are a 1-3 football team that has plenty of flaws. And the Seahawks, they have a bye coming up in Week 6. After that, it's the first NFC West matchup of the year with the Cardinals, and that is a far bigger game in the scheme of things. You've got Kyler Murray at quarterback. You want to have an athletic blitzer like Adams available. That's going to be crucial. He's one of your best players, so this is a wise move. It's too early in the year to rush him, and quite frankly, with how Ryan Neal has played the last couple games, the Seahawks shouldn't feel like they need to rush him back. Neal has played really well the last 2 weeks. Who knows how long that continues, but he's certainly proven that he's capable of giving them some snaps until Adams is ready to come back. They need him to be 100% healthy to get where they want to go, and that's back to the Super Bowl. So as much as you want to stay undefeated, and obviously Adams is pushing to play, he is the ultimate competitor, but you have to protect your best assets from themselves. In this case, get him back in a few weeks, 100% healthy, ready to roll, middle of the season, and hopefully no more injuries. He can play the rest of the year for you. You can go into the playoffs with one of the best safeties in the NFL, bolstering your defense. On the flip side, getting Quentin Dunbar back for this game may be much more important, because Minnesota has a lot of firepower on the outside in Adam Thielen and rookie Justin Jefferson, who's just been tearing it up the last 2 weeks. These guys are both big-bodied, athletic receivers that can win downfield. Trey Flowers has struggled quite a bit the last 2 weeks as a replacement for Dunbar. Dunbar is simply a better matchup. He is a better player if he's healthy, and it sounds like he's got a good chance to play after missing the last 2 games with a knee issue. He did a walkthrough on Wednesday. Carroll said he's expected to practice in some capacity today, and that would be really big news for the Seahawks when you consider the offensive firepower that the Vikings have. They have those really good top-level receivers in Thielen and Jefferson. You want to have your best corners. As important of a player as Jamal Adams is, at least in this game, I think they can get by with Ryan Neal there. But having Trey Flowers back on the field, and Flowers has had some success against the Vikings in the past. He had an interception against them last year and played well in coverage against Stephon Diggs. But he has struggled the first 2 weeks here where he has been in the starting lineup, and the Seahawks traded for Dunbar for a reason. They believe that he can help this secondary be better than it was last year. Shaquille Griffin had his best game of the season. You'd love to get Dunbar back in the lineup against a team that two of their best players are their top two wide receivers. And so they're holding out hope that Dunbar is going to be back. And Adams, in the meantime, they're going to continue to rest him. They don't want to push it and re-aggravate or injure that groin worse by having him rush back onto the field. So you won't have Adams. There's a decent chance Dunbar is going to be able to play in this game, which would be a big boost to Seattle's defense. Otherwise, they had a bunch of guys on their injury list this week, 26 to be exact on Wednesday, but a number of them were veteran rest days. They had a couple players, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, that were given workload management designations. That's a new one for the Seahawks, but Greg Olsen got the veteran rest day. So I don't know how that is different from the two receivers, but a lot of the players that are on that injury list aren't going to be an issue this week. They'll be able to get back. Dwayne Brown sat out, but that's what he does on Wednesdays. He'll be ready to play. I think the Seahawks should be much healthier going into this game, with the exception being Jamal Adams and linebacker Jordan Brooks, who still doesn't look like he is going to be ready to come back this week from a knee sprain. For the most part, though, this should be a healthier football team going into this Week 5 matchup. When we return for the second quarter, I'm going to be teaming up with Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings, and we're going to start breaking down this upcoming Week 5 matchup at CenturyLink Field. Two teams that are very familiar with one another that are now going to play their third straight primetime game. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Visa knows that local businesses are the heartbeat of our communities. Whether they're our corner stores, our coffee spots, or our favorite shops, local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders. They call us by name. Always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile to support us in our community. And right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So now it's time for us to return the favor. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. Welcome to Crossover Thursday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Week 5 crossover special, Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. Luke, it's become an annual tradition, it seems like, a primetime game at CenturyLink Field between the Vikings and the Seahawks. It's the third straight year. A little different stakes this time. It's earlier in the season than it has been the first couple of times, and the Vikings not doing so hot early, but your team was able to finally get in the win column last week and is looking to continue that momentum in Seattle.
Yeah, we got rid of Bill O'Brien. Houston fans were very grateful about that. And now we get to go into what has to be the most chaotic game of the year. This is always complete madness. I can't wait.
It really has been. The last two matchups between these teams. Here's the thing, though. This is what the Seahawks do. They don't ever play a normal football game, and it's taken to another level. Team. It's taken to another level when the Vikings come to town or when they play the Patriots. Those are the two teams it feels like yeah. Just the strangest things happen when they get together with those two teams. And so really looking forward to breaking down this upcoming matchup, because these two teams always play fun games against one another. And so I'm going to get straight to the point here talking Vikings. Kirk Cousins, it has been an undesirable start, to say the least, for him. Six interceptions the first four games. Last week was his first game without one. That being said, the Texans haven't had a turnover all year. They're the only team in the NFL that has not forced one. Probably another reason Bill O'Brien's now on the unemployment line. It just seems like Kirk Cousins has been off this year, just in a number of different ways. And I know it's still early, but they lost Stephon Diggs. You lost your offensive coordinator and Kevin Stefanski, who's now really killing it in Cleveland. The Browns off to a red hot start at 3-1. What do you think's been the biggest issue for Cousins? And do you see after last week's performance that he's now starting to trend back towards what we saw the last couple seasons?
Yeah, Cousins is always a week-to-week proposition. And I think that there are these like phases of Kirk Cousins where he just like forgets what sport he's playing and just like puts up these total stinkers. And I think that's what happened in the first couple of I think that's what happened in the first couple matchups, first couple weeks. But honestly, he hasn't been, I don't think, as bad as that interception total would tell you. Two of those were on like Hail Marys. There were a couple of them that were like these, there was one that was off the hands of a receiver. Some of those are, I think, with the players around him. First 2 weeks, Justin Jefferson didn't quite have all the calls down quite yet. He's now like in full swing. You know, of course, Thielen is still there and everything, and there's been a lot of pressure issues. But I would say that the offense has been, if the offense can continue what it did in the last 2 weeks, I think that's entirely acceptable. And that includes Kirk Cousins. He's been back to throwing nice, accurate balls. And sometimes he does a brain fart and he does something really stupid and he'll throw up something that he shouldn't throw up, or he'll miss somebody wide open deep. And that's just kind of always what he's going to be. But I don't think what we've seen this year is anything outside of the norm for Kirk Cousins. You can continue to expect exactly what you would normally expect from Kirk Cousins in prime time.
Yeah, this is a passing league now, and we have seen Kirk Cousins put up pretty good numbers the last couple of years, but it just seems like, and I know the analytics community, they go nuts when I bring this up with the Seahawks sometimes too. This year, obviously, they're letting Russ cook, but the Vikings...
I've had Ben on my show.
Yeah, the Vikings team, as a team, it just seems like they are much, much better when they get Dalvin Cook rolling on the ground, like they've done the last couple of weeks. He didn't have great numbers the first two games of the season. He has been killing it the last 2 weeks, and he's a running back that has really impressed me ever since he came to the league. He's had some injury issues, obviously, but when he's been healthy, he's been dynamic. And the last two times these two teams played, the Seahawks found a way to shut him down for the most part. So does it seem to you like in this particular matchup specifically that he has to be the number one key for them offensively? Because they haven't been able to get him going those last two times. And even though the Seahawks have struggled against the pass, if you can run the ball on them in Seattle, crowd or not, seems like that's a big advantage for them coming in.
Yeah, it's... So here's something you can give to the analytics people. There was something that I think Lee Sharp did where he looked at everybody's third downs and both how frequently series get to third downs, like how many of their plays are on third down. And you don't want to have a lot of plays on third down, right? You want to convert on first and second down. And then how long those third downs were. And the Vikings are a team that has some of the fewest like percentage of third down snaps, which means they're doing well enough on first and second to convert. And they're one of the most frequent early down rushing teams in the league, which is telling a story that they're running on early downs and it's working and it's keeping them ahead of the chains and giving them, you know, good manageable situations. Their third downs are pretty long when they get there, but they haven't been getting there very long. And it is like very reminiscent of other teams around them in that particular stat are teams that pass on first and second down all the time. So it's working really well for them. You know, you have to stop this run game. You have to be very gap sound. You have to have a lot of agility along your front seven, because, you know, if you have a whole bunch of power, you'll be able to get pressure and stuff. You'll be able to, you know, burst through some of these paper thin guards like Drew Samia. But if you don't have that agility, you won't be able to, you know, Dalvin Cook's going to get the edge on you. And guys like Brian O'Neill and Garrett Bradbury, if you don't have enough agility, you might get caught by those guys in the second level. They've been absolutely excellent at getting out of the formation, getting out into the second level, blocking downfield, and kind of turning a 5-yard run into a 15-yard run, if you will. And then Cook himself is this very hard to tackle player. If you aren't like sound at tackling, if you aren't sound at setting up good tackle opportunities, you're going to be diving at ankles. And he has just unbelievable balance and bouncing off tackles and stuff. So the running game has been very, very good through these first four games of the season. And I think the way around it is honestly to get the Vikings chasing the game where they can't run. That's what the Packers did. That's what the Colts did. And they had the Vikings, you know, in situations where they were two scores behind in the third quarter, suddenly you don't feel as good about running and setting up play action and stuff. And that's, I think, the best way to get Dalvin Cook out of the game. But if you do have to contend with that run, like, you know, early in the game, or if the Vikings have a lead, then you have to be really, really gap sound, really, really mechanically sound tackling. Otherwise he's going to punish you.
Yeah, he's one of those big, powerful backs that if you try to arm tackle him, it's game over. He's going to be breaking those every single time. And like I said, the Seahawks have been lucky. The last two times they played him, they've kept him in check for the most part. But you can tell Pete Carroll is not going to hold – he's not going to be looking back at those two games and thinking, well, we're in good shape. He definitely has a fear of Dalvin Cook, listening to him today, one of his favorite running backs, and not one that he necessarily enjoys having to game plan for. But let's talk Vikings defense here. And I know Vikings fans are going to be upset that I'm bringing this up. Obviously, the news of Danielle Hunter probably being done for the season now. That's not what Vikings fans wanted to hear, especially
rumored, yeah.
Consider that I know going into this season when the Vikings traded for Yannick Ngakoue, I immediately thought, oh my goodness, the ferocious pass rush that this team is going to have. And obviously missing Hunter all season so far, and sounds like he's going to be done for the rest of the season. It has not been ferocious to this point. 14 quarterback hits so far per Pro Football Reference. That's tied for the second lowest total in the NFL. Aside from just losing Hunter, what all has gone wrong there rushing in general, and how are they trying to address this issue? Which players are going to need to step up now that we know you're probably not going to have Hunter the rest of the season?
They just don't have a lot of horses on that defensive line. You know, Ngakoue's been great. He's been himself. He's been exactly what you would expect from him, but he's only one guy and he can't do it himself. Ifeanyi Odenigbo's been another guy who I thought was going to come in and be able to play kind of starting quality football. He started off a little slow. I think he is to that point now. I think he's been playing. He's really kind of, he's been disrupting a lot, but everybody else gets the cleanup sack or the hit or whatever. So he doesn't show up in the box score a lot, but I think he's been playing very well. The big issue is on the interior right now. The starting defensive tackles are Shamar Stephen, who you guys are familiar with, and Jaleel Johnson, who has been a healthy scratch in games where the Vikings had better depth. So he's not somebody I think the Vikings are particularly high on. They just didn't have anybody else in the building. They had Michael Pierce, who opted out before the season because he has asthma. So he didn't want to mess with all the COVID stuff. And so I think that is where the like crux of the problem is. The Vikings just don't have play. I mean, they don't have, I mean, Ngakoue is great, but he's not Danielle Hunter. And, you know, if Ifeanyi Odenigbo is great, but that's a far cry from, you know, Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin. And then you had, you know, a couple of years ago, like Sheldon Richardson up the middle and Linval Joseph and all. This is not that group anymore. They just aren't able to generate a lot of pressure up the middle. And they're able to generate, I think, a normal amount of pressure off the edge, but they just relied on edge pressure so much over the last few years that they just don't have that like it's kind of jarring to see a decline, even if that decline is to like average-ish or, you know, like acceptable versus like good. And the other thing is that the corners, I'm sure you'll ask about here soon, but the corners, the coverage, the secondary hasn't been that great. And it means that quarterbacks can get rid of the ball a little bit more quickly. That makes life a lot harder on the defensive line, but that's a symbiotic thing. The lack of pressure on the defensive line is also making the corners job harder. And that's kind of why the defense has struck, like that's really where the defense has struggled is, you know, kind of everybody is hurting each other by just not being as good as we are used to Mike Zimmer defenses being, because they only have like three good players.
It sounds kind of similar to the Seahawks. I'm sure we'll talk about this too. It really is difficult for your secondary when you're not able to get pressure on the quarterback. And that does lead into my last question here, because there are several young cornerbacks on this Vikings squad that I've been intrigued by when I was in the pre-draft process. Cameron Dantzler was a player. I looked at the length and I thought that might be a guy the Seahawks look at. Then he had a really poor 40-yard dash and that really hurt his stock some, but certainly he's been a guy that the Vikings have been happy with, but early in the season, it's been a struggle for all these guys. Just a very young group. They lost Xavier Rhodes, Mackenzie Alexander, some of the other players that were back there the last several years. So completely overhauled secondary. And so I guess my big question, what has been your early impression of that group? And then here's the big one. How do you see that group with so many young players holding up against the Seahawks trio of weapons on the outside?
Well, yeah, the second question is an easy one. I'm deeply concerned about it. It's a huge, huge mismatch, and it's going to, I think, be the thing to watch for the whole game is DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and now even David Moore against a really undermatched secondary. I don't think there's any two ways about that. But to go on with Dantzler specifically, so the deal with his 40-yard dash, my theory is that he actually showed up to camp with a bunch of bad weight because he's such a skinny guy. He tried to gain a bunch of weight so that he didn't like weigh in at like a buck 75 and he weighed in at like a buck 90, but he had one of the highest body fat contents in the entire combine. So he came in with a whole bunch of bad weight and then he ran a 4.6. I don't think it was hard to to lose that weight. I think he had a pretty easy time with that. And so far he has not been playing like a slow 4-6 corner or everything. I think he just had a bunch of bad weight in March. And I think you could probably throw that out of the sample. He's been okay. He and Gladney and Holton Hill, they've been better in the last couple of games than they were in the first two. They've just all made a million mistakes in the first two. And then Dantzler actually missed a couple games with a broken rib. And he's back off of that injury now. So there's been, I guess, ups and downs, you'd call it, with more downs than ups. But I think they've been playing at like a decent, at least they're playing at like an NFL quality level, but it's certainly not a strong secondary yet. It's, still a lot of young players. These rookies are still making rookie mistakes where they're misreading things. They're late to read things. They're, you know, playing off when they should play up. They're playing up when they should play off. And this is normal kind of coming of age stuff for cornerbacks. But in terms of the game to game, this is the kind of moment that you're finding them in. And that's going to be a pretty big advantage. And if they can't keep up with somebody like DK Metcalf, it could be a real long day.
Yeah, that's kind of been the theme for the Seahawks. They've played a number of teams that have a lot of young cornerbacks out there, and they've been able to feast on it. So maybe not necessarily a good omen, but that being said, Mike Zimmer's a great defensive coach. He's got good coaches on his staff, and so this is one of those units that any game you could see the light switch go on for a couple of these young guys that clearly have talent. And so I think that the future's bright back there. I'm just curious to see how they stack up against one of the best trios of receivers in the NFL. This would not be a true crossover episode, though, if we didn't switch the tables here and you started to pick me apart a little bit about the Seahawks going into this game. So we're going to do that here in a moment on our Crossover Thursday here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
As an avid runner and weightlifter, it's never easy to stay on top of your game. Whether I'm trying to increase my max on bench press or cut my best mile time by 10 seconds, there are always obstacles and you have to find a way to power through them. What is your wall and how do you run through it? For me, I turn to Built Go, the healthy replacement for your energy drink. Coming from the makers of Built Bar, you know it's top quality and delicious. Easy to take in 1.5-ounce packages, it's the best workout gel on the market without the crash feeling you get from products such as 5-Hour Energy because it's all natural with 1/3 of the caffeine of a monster drink. Built Go comes in 3 delicious flavors, including peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. Loaded with the good stuff to help me power to my goals, it includes fast-absorbing collagen protein, beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine to help me get going and promote joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 30% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
Okay, coming back into this Crossover Thursday on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm here with Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks. I'm Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. And I guess we have to talk about, let's pick it up kind of where we left off on the other side. You know, the Vikings corners have been struggling and the Seahawks have this absolutely terrifying trio of receivers. We know who DK Metcalf is. We know who Tyler Lockett is. But what about this David Moore character who's been coming in out of the woodwork, especially, you know, Tyler Lockett, I don't think he got a catch last week. And there was plenty of production to go around. So is the face of this group changing? I mean, and I guess the other question is, how do they play? You know, what is this a crew of deep shot mavens that you know you have to play quarters against all the time? Is there one guy who's a possession thing? Is it more about route running and finesse? Are they big and physical? You know, what kind of matchup can we expect? And I guess like how would you prepare for that kind of thing?
Well, obviously, all three of the receivers you mentioned, particularly DK Metcalf, are vertical threats. All three of them can beat you downfield. And especially when you're talking about Metcalf and David Moore, both of those guys have a big catch radius. They're big bodied players that are matchup problems when they get vertical because of their athleticism to go with it. And Tyler Lockett can just blow by you. And the thing that defenders have to worry about with him is he's such a quick, shifty route runner in the short to intermediate game too, that you can't just bank on him running past you on a vertical all the time. And so that makes him a real problem. I mean, all three of these guys have been fantastic. Lockett actually had a couple catches in the second half last week. He was shut out the first three quarters, but came up with a couple big catches. So I don't know that the face of the receiving group has changed necessarily. I think DK Metcalf is coming for that. I mean, he has been incredible other than a few drops and his fumble that he had against the Cowboys at the goal line, which he will never make that mistake ever again. But most specifically, you asked about David Moore, and he's a fascinating character. Vikings fans, unfortunately, probably know him well because he had a really long touchdown reception against him last year. And that's been the big issue with him his first couple years in the league is you would see flashes where you're like, this kid is going to be a special player. He would tease you, and then you'd go three games where you're like, is David Moore even on the team anymore? And this happened for 2 years. You just had incredible inconsistency from him. And I think some of it's he was a former Division II player. And so it was a huge leap going from East Central Oklahoma to the NFL, even though he had all the physical tools. I think at this point, though, you're finally seeing him develop consistency. He had a catch rate below 50% the last 2 years. He's at 90% right now. So he's been money. Russell Wilson has much more trust in him now than he ever has. And then they have this other kid, a rookie, Freddie Swain out of Florida, that's been getting one or two catches every game and continues to impress as if they needed another weapon. And they don't have Philip Dorsett or Josh Gordon back either. There's a chance this group could get better. So Russell Wilson has never had a stable of receivers anywhere close to as good as this group. And it could get better before the season's over with.
Yeah, and this is where all the, like, let Russ cook comes, and it makes sense. You know, if you've got Metcalf and Moore and Lockett and stuff, yeah, I'd huck it deep all the time and try to get a million explosive plays. But I'd like to actually switch to the other side. I'm actually almost more fascinating. You know, the Seahawks offense makes sense to me. I know Russell Wilson, and I know what it's like to have a whole bunch of deep receivers and pair it with a guy like Russell Wilson. I can envision that. But the defense, I guess it confuses me a little more. Now, especially, you know, they got Jamal Adams in, but he's not going to be available for this game. So I guess in the secondary, who are the characters, you know, who are the matchups here that we should watch? And the question I have to ask everybody specifically is slot or outside, what's more vulnerable? Because the Vikings have a guy like Adam Thielen, who they like to put in the slot and outside. They have Justin Jefferson, who they like to put in the slot and outside. And all of that is matchup dependent. So I always have to ask what the matchups are like so we can kind of figure out who's actually going to be going up against who.
So this is a big question mark just because not only Jamal Adams is going to be missing this week, there is still a chance Quentin Dunbar won't be playing in this game. Now, Pete Carroll made it sound like they were pretty optimistic about him being able to practice tomorrow. And if he's able to do that, then I think there's a really good chance that he comes back after missing the last two games, which would make Seahawks fans feeling they would feel much more comfortable with having Quentin Dunbar out there than Trey Flowers, who had been the starter the last 2 years. He's really struggled the last couple weeks, though. And so putting him up against Justin Jefferson or Adam Thielen when they do work on the outside, that would be something that would worry some fans. And I think Quentin Dunbar matches up better with him. So that's really the big question mark here. Is Quentin Dunbar going to be available or not? Now, in the slot, they lost their starting slot corner, Marquise Blair, in week two to a torn ACL. And I think everybody at that point was panicking because he had a fantastic camp. It really looked like the kid was going to take off in year two. And another guy that's in his second season, Ugo Amadi, all he's done is come in and play fantastic football the last 2 weeks. Now, he is a much smaller player, 5'9", around 195, 200 pounds.
And he's playing nickel now? I thought it was a safety.
He was playing. He's played in nickel for him. He's on their depth chart. He can play safety, but they've got him playing slot corner, and he's been fantastic the last 2 weeks. My one concern there, though, is his lack of height, especially if Adam Thielen is getting a lot of reps in there. I think that is an area the Vikings could capitalize on. But Amadi he's a gritty little guy. He always seems to prove you wrong when you count him out. And so he's been fantastic for him. He has actually been the one guy in the secondary that has been extremely consistent, playing well these first few weeks. Other than Ryan Neal, the replacement for Jamal Adams, I have to include him in this because this guy was thinking about quitting football before this year. He was a practice squad guy, but he's 6'3", 200 pounds, two interceptions the last 2 weeks. He's had 10 solo tackles. A couple of them have been hit sticks on guys, and it's just kind of made you wonder where this guy come from. And so he's been really good. Now, we'll see now that teams have tape on him for a game and a half, how much that impacts things. But he's played really well. He's going to start in this game. The Seahawks secondary is just going to play differently with him out there than what they're going to when they have Jamal Adams on the field. But certainly he has been a surprise. So I would say right now the outside corners are probably more susceptible. Shaquille Griffin played really well last week, but he's been up and down this year. And we just don't know whether it's going to be Flowers or Dunbar. So I think in the slot they're okay, especially when you consider players like Bobby Wagner are going to be there to help in coverage, and he's had a fantastic season in coverage too. So I think where they're going to be most vulnerable, probably on the outside, though, Thielen against Amadi kind of scares me.
That makes sense. They might even put Justin Jefferson there. He's actually, I think he's got an inch on Thielen. He's even a little taller in there, but they're both good contested catch receivers. So that'll be an interesting,
the size that's an interesting factor absolutely sure. Concerns me. Yep.
And they have, you know, catch radiuses that like go along with that too. But I guess, I mean, the biggest vulnerability, perhaps the single weakest spot on a Vikings team full of holes right now is the guards, the interior offensive line. Garrett Bradbury, the center's had a nice year. Tackles are playing okay. But the guards have been comically bad. Dakota Dozier, he's a backup quality player. Drew Samia, probably shouldn't be on an NFL field at this point in his career. And so I guess if, you know, knowing that it's the guards, it's the B gaps that are going to be the most susceptible, who do the Seahawks have that is like most well-equipped to attack that?
So I was talking to my co-host Rob Rang about this on our Wednesday show. We were looking at some matchups that we circled that could play in Seattle's favor. And this is one that immediately jumped out to me because Jaron Reed has had kind of a quiet season, but he had a strip sack against the Cowboys. He is still easily their best interior pass rusher. And he has had good success against the Vikings in the past.
Yep.
Kirk Cousins has seen him several times. And so I think this is a game that Jaron Reed could blow up. And I'll tell you what, Puna Ford is a darn good football player too. They're giving up 3.4 yards per rush right now, which is the third best mark in the league. And some of it is that teams aren't running much on them because they've been able to pass so easily. But when teams have tried to run on them, they've had a really tough time. And a big part of that has been Jaron Reed and Puna Ford, who both are athletic enough to be able to rush the passer. We haven't seen Ford really develop as a pass rusher the way I thought he was going to, but there have been signs and he's developing some counter moves now. And so he could also be a factor in the pass rushing game. And of course, the other guy I've got to include here, he's got three tackles this year, but his statistics don't tell you how well he's been playing. LJ Collier, after having such a rough rookie year, has been really good for the Seahawks. He upended He upended Newton at the goal line in week two to win that game. He's had seven quarterback pressures. A couple of them have come from the interior. They've been moving him down inside to rush from three tech. And he's looked really good when they've done that with him on third and long situations, second and long situations. So if you've got suspect guards, he is a plus athlete when you reduce him inside. He's not a plus athlete at defensive end, but a defensive tackle he is. And he plays with really heavy hands. And he's got surprising counter moves to go with it. He might be a guy to watch in this game too. If you've got vulnerable guards, LJ Collier can be a real threat rushing the passer from inside.
And that's we saw the Titans do that with Jadeveon Clowney. We saw, actually, I don't think the Texans did that with J.J. Watt. I think they kept him mostly on the edges. So it'll be interesting to see what Pete Carroll and the Seahawks do. But I suppose we should move on to some predictions. Right now, MyBookie, promo code locked on, double your first deposit, has the Seahawks favored by 7 points. If you ask me, I think this game is just going to be too chaotic to be a 7-point game. This sounds like a game where, you know, both offenses will be able to pass deep on both secondaries. And I don't think the Vikings are going to win. I just don't think they have the horses to keep up all the way. I don't think that they can stymie Russell Wilson, but I do think their offense can keep pace and at least cover the spread. So I'm going to take the Vikings to cover plus seven. But what do you think, Corbin?
So I'm not really much of a gambling man, so I don't know that I'll go that route there. But I can tell you right now that when I was looking at the box score from last year's game, I thought this is probably going to be another 37-30 game. That sounds about
over
right
under
to
57
me.
And a half points. Yeah.
So, you know, if we're looking at the 7 margin there, I think it's going to be right on. I think it is going to be in that 1-score range. But for this case, for my prediction, I actually think the Seahawks, just because they always seem to have weird scores, I actually am going to go with 41-33. I think the Seahawks win by 8. It's the kind of weird game they've played all year anyway. And so I think they do have a few too many weapons for the Vikings secondary to deal with. And I also think, and we didn't really touch on this, but I look at the Vikings. You mentioned the issues in the interior. I think Seattle's strong point on their offensive line now, Dwayne Brown's still very good, but their two guards have been playing great football, including rookie Damian Lewis. I think running the ball this week could be a real problem for the Vikings defense. When you've got Chris Carson and maybe Carlos Hyde coming back and playing this week, that could be a big problem for them. If they can get the run game going, I just think there's a few too many horses, but this defense for Seattle will probably allow it to stay a game.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking. But hey, if you want to chew some clock, you know, look at what the Colts did to the Vikings in week two. Jonathan Taylor behind Quentin Nelson and Mark Lewinsky, who you guys are probably familiar with. Yeah, that was a bloodbath. And if the Seahawks can replicate that, then they can, that could mean the Vikings are in for a long game. But I do agree. I think this could be the second time this year that the Viking, that a Zimmer defense lets a 40 burger out. And that hadn't happened in the entirety of Mike Zimmer's tenure until the Packers did it week one. And I kind of feel like it could happen again. But hey, Corbin, thank you so much for your time and explaining the Seahawks to me and hanging out on this crossover Thursday.
Yeah, it was a blast. Looking forward to this game. And like we said at the beginning of this crossover, it always seems like really weird stuff happens. So I would expect the unexpected when these two teams face off in prime time.
Yeah, and watch this be like 16-14, kind of sleepy bunch of field
completely,
goals.
Completely exactly... different than we predicted, yeah.
All right, thank you so much, Corbin.
Thanks for having me.